Welcome to Had to Be There, the podcast that allows you to explore the world's greatest destinations through the stories of those who have been there. Here to ignite the wanderlust within, your host and favorite travel planner, Kelly Acevedo.
Bienvenidos, mis amigos. Welcome to the Had to Be There podcast, where we are exploring the world one story at a time. I'm your host, Kelly, and this is episode 86. No weekly roundup this week, but please stay tuned to @vacationsby_Kelly on Instagram for lots of big Black Friday sales this weekend. And in the spirit of tomorrow's holiday, allow me to take a moment to give thanks to each of you who consistently tune in, interact with my content, and are just the overall best. So thanks for sticking around. And now, without any ado whatsoever, someone get me a Rita Hayworth poster so I can bust out of this joint. And for my non-movie fan friends, that's a quote from The Shawshank Redemption. Remember, he tunnels his way out of the prison and escapes to a very specific place? That's where we're headed today. So let's jump right in. All right. Michelle, welcome to the Had to Be There podcast. I'm so excited to finally get to chat with you.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. I appreciate your patience.
Absolutely. Before we jump into our conversation today, can you take a minute to introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little about you?
Sure. I am Michelle Muncy Silva. I am the lead writer, owner, chief in charge of the Travel with Intention website. And we, as a family, have been traveling for quite a few years now and really enjoying ourselves as we explore the world.
Oh, I love it. And where are you guys from?
We are in California. And so we are Central Coast, California area.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, very so nice. Surrounded by a lot of really good airports.
Well, isn't that convenient?
It is. I love it. Yeah, all kinds of options.
I love it. So tell me a little bit about your relationship to travel. Did you get to travel a lot growing up as a kid with your family, or did you start a little bit later in life?
I think the first experience I had with my dad was very promotion oriented. So anytime there was a new job that came with a better title or better pay, we were off. And so I always say I spent like the first half of my life on an airplane, traveling back and forth as we relocated to different cities. And so it started off like that. That was all very state based. And then my mom decided on a whim when I was about seven that she'd always wanted to see England. So there was no time like the present. And she packed her little girl up and we took off for 2 weeks and explored all of the UK. And when you're young, things get really blurry as you get older and your memories kind of fade. But I will never forget her taking me to Scotland and we went to go see this castle, and they were allowing us to stay in the castle itself. And so they set up dinner for us. The restaurant was just as it would have been during a certain era in Scotland. And so there were no forks. There were no forks. There were only knives. And so I will never forget that idea of just stabbing my food and looking at my mom, like, who had brought me up to be very proper at the table going, right? Am I supposed to do this? And yes. I mean, those little weird things that you remember when you're a kid.
Yeah.
It was so, so unique. And so just that kind of kicked off. We didn't travel again internationally like that for decades. It wasn't until I was in college. Actually, my parents really hated my boyfriend in college. And so they were asking, what do you think about an international program? What do you think about a semester abroad? How's that sound? And that's what happens when your parents hate your boyfriend. So that I got a chance to go back to England and travel around the UK again. And so that really kind of kickstarted it for me, because I realized it's like, wait, this is a completely different experience. Yes, I've been here before, but I'm changed. I'm different. I'm older. And so that kind of put a seed in my mind that, wait, if each experience you have can be so completely different, why not try to do this more? Yes. And so that kind of planted that desire in my mind. And then when my husband and I started having children, we recognized that we wanted to plant that same seed in them and let them see more of the world, so they could,
yeah,
one, appreciate what they had, but two, understand perspective that comes from, yes, hearing different people's stories.
Oh, I love that. I love that you had the foresight to get them traveling young.
Oh, no, for sure. And my husband is actually the first one in his family that was born in the United States. So we're constantly thinking of travel, not only as let's explore the world, but let's connect you to your history, where, yeah, you've come from. And so it's really definitely multifaceted for us.
Oh, that's incredible. So tell me where you're taking us today.
Oh. We had the most unique experience on a trip to Zihuatanejo. It was one of those moments that just you can't script. It just happened. And it was so magical in the just most unexpected way. We traveled to the state of Guerrero, where Zihuatanejo is, and it's this beautiful beachfront town in a little cove area. It's just ideal. If you've seen Shawshank Redemption, that's
what I was thinking.
Yes,
and I was like, I've heard of this place.
Yes, it is for a good reason. It's a little more populated than it showed in the end of the movie, but definitely worth a visit. So we get out of the plane, we grab a cab and we're going over to our hotel. And my husband is bilingual, so he starts talking to the cab driver, and we start asking him questions. You know, that's one of the things that we love to do, is talk to the locals, find out, you know, where should we go to eat? What should we see? What should we do? Yeah. And so we were in conversation with him as we're driving, and we're driving up this kind of twisty, windy road. And I look over to the side. Needless to say, we're driving fairly slowly because of the twisty, turny road. And there is a gate, and it's completely overgrown. It actually reminded me of something you would see from Jurassic Park movies, where, you know, the dinosaurs have taken over.
Yeah,
the gate is wide open. It looks abandoned. Vines growing. Basically, the tropical environment is taking the property back.
Yeah.
And you can see there's a concrete road that goes beyond the gate. And so I asked, I'm like, what is that? And so my husband asked the cab driver, what is the story here? What's that? And he goes, oh, do you want to see it?
Yes.
And I was like, wait. Well, but initially I have to tell you, my reaction was, are we supposed to?
Right.
I'm not sure. This is, you know, something I want to be cautious about, but I couldn't say no. But yeah, I was like, is it safe? That's my one. If it's safe, then
sure.
Yeah,
sure.
It's open.
Yeah.
So he turns and starts taking the road. And it's this entire, he's explaining to us that it is, he's being very vague for his own purposes. There was a politician, a very powerful politician in the Mexican government, that had a brother. And the brother came upon some money and bought this huge compound, wow, where he was going to house all of his family and friends. And it was literally like a small town unto itself. So we're driving and it's been completely abandoned. And so you can see through the trees and the vines, there's this huge, almost like an apartment complex that's been built, and there's no windows in it yet, but the apartment complex is still there, and vines are coming in and out of the windows. And there's this giant, beautiful entryway, almost like to a hotel. Wow. And it's just got creeper vines going all through it. And he's showing us, he goes, this was the family compound. And then over there, that's where the friends were going to stay. That's the meeting place. And he's driving us all through, up and down. It's almost like it's almost like its own village.
Yeah.
And so he's driving us through it all. And we're just like in awe because it's beautiful, even now that it's been taken over by all these vines. And we turn and he parks. And what they had built was this huge infinity pool. And ooh, it looked out at the beach. They had a private beach.
Wow.
And all of the vines from the trees are coming down and they're just touching on the pool. And these butterflies have just completely taken over the area. And in the tree and they're all around. And as soon as we closed the cab doors, the noise, they all just fluttered up and exploded out of the area. It was beautiful.
Oh my gosh.
And so I asked the cab driver, I'm like, why is no one, this is the most, even now that it's abandoned, this is the most beautiful place. And he goes, well, it wasn't exactly legal how he came into all the money. And as soon as the very powerful politician brother was no longer in power, they swooped in, arrested him, and confiscated everything. The family, apparently, so I asked him, I'm like, is this property for sale? Because you just look, you drive through it and you're just like, this is such a gem.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no one will buy it. They're too afraid of the consequences.
Wow.
Of course, the family still has sway. Mm-hmm. And so he said, no one will touch it because it's just going to stay with the family untouched.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one will have anything to do with it. And so it was just the most fascinating experience to see that and just to wonder like what this could have been if it was, you know, released to someone that had legal means.
Right, right. Or if the brother had stayed in power and they could have carried on with their plan.
Right, right. Yeah, I probably wouldn't have ever seen the inside of that complex at that point. There might have been some dealings I might not have ever want to know about.
Wow. But,
It was fascinating. And we got to walk on the beach and the boys, you know, played around the area and you just looked and you're just like, God, you know, imagine you could just have so much fun here. But yeah, no, we had to leave. And so the cab driver just took us right back out and it was like nothing ever happened, you know.
But that's incredible
experience. Yeah, I will never forget that.
And all because your husband struck up a conversation with this driver.
Yes, exactly. And that really has, I have to say, that has given us some of the most unique experiences, because when you really do get to talk to local people and feel comfortable with them, that they do really show you such magical stuff in return. They really
absolutely
do.
And I saw that you've been to like a ton of places in Mexico. Is that where your husband's family is from?
Yes.
Okay.
He came here in the mid 70s. And so we've really made it a priority to make sure that the boys get back at least once a year so they can connect with family that's still there and to get to know. We've been really, really specific with what we want them to know about the country that their family comes from.
Yeah.
So we've really tried to show them as much as possible to get them beyond, you know, certain stereotypes that might exist about.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
Things like that. So, but yeah, we definitely go back frequently. In fact, we just got back, I want to say about a week ago.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So why should people add not just Mexico, but specifically Zihuatanejo to their bucket lists?
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow. What reasons do I have? I know my husband's over at the couch going, ah! definitely warm beaches. Yes, 100%. The beaches are incredible. In fact, one of the best days that we spent, we went for a drive and you find a restaurant on the beach. And we showed up with our own cooler filled with things. And we had, you know, the drinks that we like to drink, the snacks that we knew our kids would jump on, you know, and the occasional bottle of tequila. And so you can show up at a restaurant with your, you know, ice chest full of things. You pick a table and they just sit you down. What would you like us to bring you? And so we literally sat at this open patio dining. Our boys were right there in front of us at the beach. They played in the water all day. Mm-hmm. And we sat there and enjoyed food from the restaurant, our own things that we'd brought. And it's just the most laid back and casual environment in mm-hmm. that. And the people at the restaurant were like, because you know, in the United States, you sit at a table, it's like turnover. We want turnover. Yeah. And I was a waitress all through college. So I 100% get that.
Yeah.
You go someplace like Zihuatanejo and it's like, what do you want to do today? You want to sit at a restaurant all day and enjoy the beach? We welcome you. Come hang out, have fun.
Wow.
It's just so relaxed. And the people are so incredibly friendly. There's a restaurant that our cab driver recommended to us, and she's kind of a local celebrity. And yeah, she's been on the Food Network, and she's been, oh my God, all these celebrity chefs have been there. Anthony Bourdain, Bobby Flay, was he one of them? I can't remember everybody, but Andrew Zimmerman. Yeah. Just a ton of people have been there. So you would think it would become this very elite atmosphere with jacked up prices. And this sweet woman still walks out and greets every single customer every single day. The prices are still affordable. And so we go there and have breakfast every time we're there.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And there's a restaurant, because the way Zihuatanejo is built, it's very hilly. And so where you are, you're just destined to have a beautiful view of the entire bay. And there's a restaurant that we're very food centric, by the way. So I apologize for all the restaurant references. But
please don't ever apologize for that.
There's a restaurant up on the hill, just open, what, Il Forno, right? And you go get yourself a table with an open view of the entire bay. The service is just amazing. The food is fantastic. And you get to watch the sunset while you eat. And just take your time and enjoy the entire atmosphere and drink occasionally. You know? it's a beautiful town that to me hasn't lost the laid back atmosphere of Mexico. It hasn't become so hyped that it's become like, if you go to Cabo, you're basically in San Diego. Yeah, don't go. Don't go. You're basically in San Diego. Ixtapa, where you fly into, is basically like San Diego, but you go over 10 minutes away to Zihuatanejo, 5 minutes, and you're just in the Mexico that is worth escaping to.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that, huh? We went to a little market. Because in Mexico, a lot of times people will become specialists in preparing certain types of food. If you go down the corner, there's a woman that just makes tortillas, and that's what she does all day long. Wow. Or another corner, there's a woman that just rotisserie chicken. That's all she does. And they become so incredibly specialized that entire neighborhoods will just go to that one person for that one thing. Wow. And you have that in Zihuatanejo. You walk and you're going to find that person. And we did that one time. We found somebody selling tortillas, grabbed a 12 peso bag of tortillas and grabbed the rotisserie chicken and literally sat on a bench by the beach and just ate. It's so fulfilling for your soul, because you get to just touch base with yourself again and with the person that you're traveling with.
Yeah.
And you get to enjoy the basics of life, you know, warm water, toes in sand, easygoing atmosphere, and great food and drink. You know, I mean, that's really Zihuatanejo to me in a nutshell. It's a beautiful place to recharge and reset.
Amazing. I can hear it climbing up people's bucket lists as you're talking.
So very worth it. It really is. Oh,
that's incredible.
The Had to Be There podcast is brought to you by Vacations by Kelly, where your host becomes your travel agent. As a proud affiliate of Academy Travel, Kelly specializes in Disney destinations and can help with all non-Disney excursions worldwide as well. When you book with Kelly, you're getting much more than a travel agent. You're getting a personalized concierge-level travel partner. And the best part? Her services are completely free. It's true. So when you're ready to make your next travel dream a reality, Vacations by Kelly is ready to make it happen. Visit hadtobethere.net/vacations to get started.
Yeah. So I want to hear about some of the other places that you visited. Are you ready to play Passport Picks?
Yes. Yes.
Yay. Tell us your favorite from all your trips. It's time to play Passport Picks.
First of all, do you know how many places that you've visited all in all?
I don't. I really don't. I haven't kept count. Isn't that okay. Funny? Travel blogger that doesn't have stats. What is that? I don't know.
Fair enough.
Everywhere from Europe to Mexico to the U.S. to we're heading to Japan for my son's senior year.
Oh, cool.
You know, we go where the heart takes you. So all over the place.
I love that. All right. So tell me your favorite way to immerse yourself in a new culture when you're traveling.
Okay. I definitely think it's twofold because they kind of go hand in hand. I think you have to try the language. You have to. I guess I shouldn't say it in those terms. That's very mandatory. But to me, it's like to immerse yourself, you need to have that vulnerability of the attempt. And yeah, you're going to sound like a tourist trying the language out.
But sure. That's
part of it is that being vulnerable and recognizing that English, though that's my comfort zone, is not going to get me nearly as far as trying to at least say thank you. And please, and learn some basic questions to ask.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that I think is huge. And then my favorite place to try out the language is in a restaurant.
Oh, that is shocking.
Right? But I love that. If you can eat the food and try the language, I think you're going to get a better sense of what, not only what the locals are about, but also what the area is about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you get a different kind of service when you're even just attempting the language. You know what I mean?
For sure. Speaking of that, I went to Paris in the 90s. And it was one of those trips where it was like, I was ready for the stereotype about how the French own their language. And I got a little bit of that. I asked for directions in French and I thought the guy was going to spit on me. I really did.
Oh, no.
I was very clear on how he felt about me. But I went back in 2022, I think it was about a year ago. Yeah, we went back and completely different experience. I tried and I used French and what I could remember of my French, I tried and I used Spanish. And between the two languages, I was so much more embraced than I had been in the past. So any stereotype that you might have that you might be hanging on to about people reacting to you trying the language, let that go.
Yeah.
I just have not found that to be true
anymore.
It's an old stereotype and it's not that way.
Yeah. Anymore. I agree. Those are great tips to immerse yourself in a new culture.
For sure.
Do you collect anything, or do you have a favorite souvenir that you've brought back from a trip?
We don't. Well, okay. So let me go with the favorite, because we just had the most amazing experience. We went to Oaxaca during mm-hmm. this last trip, and it was such a blessing that we stumbled across this. We went to a town specifically known for its weaving and rug making. Teotitlan del Valle is the name of the town, and it's east of Oaxaca, a little under an hour. Easy day trip. And so we went into the town and we were driving around looking, you know, of course, there's the church to see, the town square to see, all the shops to walk into. And we really were looking for someone that could tell us, like, how does this product get made? We wanted to meet the person that was doing it and have that kind of authentic, I'm talking to the person that made this rug kind of experience. And so we ended up leaving the town center because it felt a little bit more commercialized. And we drove out and we happened to see there was a shop. And there's just hundreds and hundreds of rugs on display. But the thing that caught our eye was there were all these different looms that were in the room. And they were all in different states of use. So there were these rugs that were done, but there were also rugs that were in progress. And there were looms of different sizes. And so we were immediately like, looms of different sizes? Like, isn't that just like a one type of machine that you use? And so we pulled over and we walk in and we met this family that had been weaving for 7 generations.
Wow.
And the kid, I call him a kid because he was like in his 20s, I think, late 20s, maybe.
That's a kid.
Yeah, right? It feels like a kid to me.
Yeah.
But he's like, do you guys want a tour? We were like, yes.
Oh my God.
We still want to learn about what you do here. And he gave us the most amazing tour. He showed us the natural materials that they use to create each color. He showed us how they combine them to get every color on the spectrum possible. He showed us how they spin the wool, how they clean it after they shear the sheep, I should say. He showed us the reason why they have different size looms is because they start as children. And so you need a little loom for a little person.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
And it's not like, it's not child labor. Like it's not like,
no.
It's not like that. It's like, we want you to practice. Look, making this little square. And this loom is built just for you. And we know that you have just this much patience. So we're going to have you practice. Just make this little thing. And they'll sell like these little coasters. So the kids are actually getting that. Oh my God, I made that.
Aww. And look,
I got that money. And so they start very young, and you cannot determine the price of an item until you become a master, which you cannot do until you're in your 30s because you need that much practice. And we had the grandmother, the matriarch of the family, let us videotape her, and she was making this huge rug. And she said, I will work on this for months because it would take that long for us to get. And she showed us how she makes everything. And her son, the father of the boy that was giving us the tour, I'm reaching my arm out because that's where he was in the room. He called my husband over and he said, do you want to cut? I've just finished a rug. Do you want to cut the strings from the loom?
Wow.
And so my husband got to go over and cut the strings. And it was this custom order that they'd made for a family there in Mexico that wanted a family tree visualized out on this huge rug
they were going to get
in their house.
Yeah.
And so it was just amazing to talk to this family and meet them all. And they welcomed us. It was basically their home. They live on the second story. And downstairs, every room he took us through either had a loom in it or the dye or, you know, there was an area for the kids.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was amazing. And so we ended up buying three rugs from them and brought them home with us. And
wow,
he explained like the whole philosophy around a particular design that they use. It looks almost like a shell because it loops around, and then it has steps on it because that's this is Zapotec culture. That's the indigenous group that's still doing the weaving there.
Yeah.
And they explain that in their culture, that symbol is a reflection of how they feel you go through life. You're born and you take these steps towards mastery, and then you plateau at your mastery. And then the design goes down because you pass away, and then you go through your afterlife learning, and you go back up steps again. And it was just, it was the most beautiful thing.
Oh my God.
To learn all of that from them and then listen to them talk about price, because it's very normal to negotiate and to talk about what the price of the rugs would be. So the son, they all spoke Spanish, but of course their indigenous language was what they used to discuss with each other. And to listen to them speak that, it was just so fascinating. It was just such an amazing experience. So those right now are my current absolute favorite souvenirs because they had such an experience behind them.
Oh, absolutely. That sounds incredible.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing. It was amazing. I'll never forget it.
Do you have a all-time number one favorite destination that you visited?
So far, I won't ever say anything is definitive, but so far, the place that I felt like I could live here was in the Azores. It was São Miguel, the island of São Miguel.
Yeah.
Because if you take that laid back atmosphere that I was talking about in Zihuatanejo and you put it on an entire island, that's São Miguel.
Wow.
It was so beautiful. Just the tea farms are just this amazing shade of green. The water, some of the most beautiful blue water I've ever seen. And thermal springs. We had an entire day at this thermal spa that I just didn't even want to get out. I told my husband, was like, we could just get dairy cows and just be dairy farmers for the rest of our lives. Right. I'm like, I think so.
Right. Yeah.
I think we could, babe. I really think we could.
Oh my gosh. That sounds amazing.
Oh, that's, if you ever get a chance to go, please go to that island and just go. I mean, we literally, the road was shut down because this guy was transferring his entire herd of cows from one pasture to another. Oh, it's God, just, funny. You know, stop for cows.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah, absolutely. Stop,
just chill. You don't have anywhere you need to be that rushed that you can't.
Exactly.
Cause she's hungry.
So oh my gosh. I love pasture. That.
Yeah. It was amazing. Now a little scary when you're driving. I almost made hamburger one time, but
I
was like, wait, what? What is that?
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, we drove. And that's you must be slow when driving on roads shared with animals.
Sure.
So, yeah. But everybody lived. Everything was fine. Whew. So yeah, I feel free to go back.
I love it. So you've mentioned that you're big foodie type people.
Sure.
Do you have a favorite local food and maybe drink that you've discovered while traveling?
Yes. Okay. So I would say, I mean, obviously we've brought up tequila. I'm not shy around my tequila. I'm a fan. But I had always had this complete distaste for mezcal. And mezcal is when you take a certain type of agave and you smoke it. You're literally smoking it. And it had, the one that I tried was, somebody had done it incredibly wrong, I think. And it just was so smoky and so overwhelming that I really did think that I couldn't stand it. And then I actually went to Oaxaca, where it's a lifestyle in Oaxaca. There's actually quite a few palenques, they call them, these places where they create their own distilleries. Small families are doing these just micro brewing. You would think of it as micro brewing. They're just these micro distilleries all around, just outside of the city. And I was like, all right, when in Rome, I'm going to try it again.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Wow. And the varieties of flavors, and they can add different fruits to it. You can get different aftertastes to it. It really truly is an art form in Oaxaca. And so my thing would be, if you're going to go to a place where this is where they make that thing, then try it again. That was my learning, because I will never think of mezcal the same way again. It was beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When done correctly.
Sure.
And obviously the place where it was just a lifestyle to make it.
Oh, wow.
And then food wise, I think our favorite food city has been so far, well, obviously New York is up at the top of the list, but if we want to go international, then Barcelona really surprised us.
Ooh.
It was incredibly diverse. Mm. And we stayed at a local home while we were there. We rented from a local, and she made some recommendations for restaurants within our neighborhood. And I know everybody's expecting me to say something about paella and go the typical way, but literally our favorite meal in Barcelona was this restaurant called the Red Ant Noodle Bar. It went back to the Red Ant Noodle Bar in Barcelona at least 3 times.
Oh my gosh.
It
How
was
funny.
Amazing. Amazing. And that city was the most eclectic food city that we've ever visited. If we were in the state, if we were in the United States, I would say New York is that type of city. It's that eclectic atmosphere where you can literally get anything. Barcelona is that equivalent to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, we absolutely loved the local recommendations that we got in Barcelona.
Yeah.
With Red Ant at the top.
Oh my gosh. I love that. I love when there's like something you just don't expect. I had a guest on once who said that the best Indian food, I think it was, that they ever had was in Ireland.
Where? Oh my gosh. Yes.
And I was like,
yes.
Yes. And like you would never think.
Right. No, no. The best pulled pork sandwich I have ever had in my life. Munich, Germany. Swear.
What?
I swear.
That's amazing.
It is so true. It is
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it.
Munich at the hotel restaurant, no less. It was highly rated. I'll give them that. They were not, I mean, people knew it was good, but you know, hotel restaurants, you're like, really? Really?
Right, right.
But oh my God. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, crazy. It's so
crazy
funny.
Yeah.
It's true.
We've had moments like that where it was like, my God, the curry, you could have poured this curry on a shoe and you would have ate it. Yeah. In Wyoming. You're like, what?
Yeah.
You're like, what? Really? Yeah. Never know. You never know.
That's true. So speaking of the unexpected, do you have a favorite travel experience, maybe besides the one we just talked about, that was unexpected?
I'm gonna throw you a little bit on this one, I think, because it sure as heck threw us. My kids, for a while, we did the Little League thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're traveling for games, and the boys are still in their uniforms, and it's been a long day. It's been back-to-back games, and it's us and a friend's family, and we're all starving. So we jump into the nearest In-N-Out we can find, which if you're in the States and you're a West Coast kind of person, you know exactly why we were craving In-N-Out.
Yeah.
So we're at this burger place, In-N-Out, and we're sitting there still in uniform, still dirty as heck, you know, baseball caps on, all of us exhausted. And a tour bus pulls up. And it is an entire tour bus filled with Chinese tourists.
Oh my gosh.
And they have come to In-N-Out to have the quintessential American hamburger experience.
Oh my God.
And I thought that was great. I'm like, oh my God, that's so great. What I did not recognize is that entire, it must have been 40 to 50 people.
Oh my gosh.
We're also obsessed with American baseball.
Oh.
And our kids were all still in uniform eating American hamburgers. And the next thing we knew, we were literally surrounded by the most loving, caring, can we please take your picture, but we don't know any English. People, we were surrounded.
Oh
and
my
they
God.
They just kept holding up their cameras, like pointing at the camera. And I just started laughing. I'm like, okay. Snapping our kids' pictures.
Oh my God.
They went from person to person, all 50 something of
them. Oh my God, that's so funny.
Taking pictures. And I know there's like this parent moment where you're like, wait a minute, there are literally pictures of my kids out in the world, but it wasn't creepy.
Right.
It was a legitimate cultural moment where it was like, oh my gosh, we are a tourist attraction to you right now.
Right.
And trying to treat that with respect, like, okay, I'm trying to empathize with where you're coming from. And I'm also trying not to laugh in a disrespectful way.
Right.
Oh my God, this is the most bizarre. I mean, this is just Saturday to us.
But, yeah, exactly.
But to them, it was like taking a picture of the Statue of Liberty. You know, oh my God, that's so funny. Look at this. It's American.
It's the most American thing I've ever seen.
Baseball uniforms eating an In-N-Out hamburger. You've got to be kidding me.
Like, oh my God. That's so cute.
It was the most unexpected. Literally, it just blew me away. I'm completely out of left field. Oh my God, this is a thing.
That's so funny.
I was so blown away. So yeah, that was a moment. And yeah,
that's a good one.
I would be surprised if my kids ever forgot that, because it was like, wait, mom,
right?
What? Right. And I was like, are you okay with it, babe? Yeah, I guess. I'm like, then go with it.
I mean, yeah.
If you're okay, I'm okay.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
It was so funny.
Oh my God.
That one blew me away.
Yeah. So is there anything that's still at the top of your travel bucket list that you haven't been able to cross off just yet?
Oh, wow. I am definitely interested in Northern Italy. Mm. I would like to jump out from Milan and go into the Piedmont area.
Yeah.
Soto is calling my name. Some of the cheeses. I want to go to Parma. Some of the balsamic vinegars. I mean, obviously, you see, I'm so foodie obsessed. Yeah,
exactly.
So Northern Italy, I want to go to. I am interested in Southern Spain because I want to make that jump over to Tangier, Morocco.
Yeah.
That to see the beautiful architecture that remains in Southern Spain. I would love to do that. Anthony Bourdain, before he passed, actually had a partnership with another man. His name is escaping me, but that man was working with Anthony Bourdain to create a specialized type of small group tour.
Okay.
And they're called Roads and Kingdoms. That's the name of the organization. And they do, shocker, food, culinary focus, tours of areas with chefs, because of course that was the Anthony Bourdain connection.
Yeah, of course.
With chefs. And they still do that today. So that, I think, one of these, I'm not a tour kind of person. I'm a little bit more like, if something takes me, I want to go. Mm-hmm. But that would be a tour I think I could still.
That would be the exception.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a price point too. It's like, if I'm going to pay that much, I'm not going to make the tour.
Right.
This isn't like a $97 to go tour your local food markets with a local. He's like, no, this is like expensive. And
yeah.
And I'm like, man, if I'm going to commit to that, I'm sticking with the whole thing. So that's on the list. I might do that sometime in the future.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Roads and Kingdoms. You have to look that up.
Great answer. So talk to me a little bit about Travel with Intention. How did this come to be and what is it?
I really had a strong sense. Maybe it was from going back to a particular destination after being absent from it for multiple years, or rather it was taking our boys on these trips, these heritage trips, if you will. Mm-hmm. I really did have a sense that travel could be purposeful. It could be so personalized that it was transformative. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really where Travel with Intention came from, is that idea of personalization. You want to personalize the experience so that it means more to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of, you know, there are so many people that are like 35 countries under the age of 35, and that works for them, and that's fine. No shame. That's all good.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that if I am traveling to a country, that I've found some way to connect with it, because
that
perspective that exists in those people that I'm interacting with has the ability to educate me.
Yeah.
And I really do feel like the world would be a lot better if we got out in it and were influenced by those other perspectives.
Yes.
And so that's the intentionality that I try to bring. I oftentimes will talk about personalization because I don't want to determine what is intentional for you.
Sure.
I want it to be so personalized to you that your intention can come through.
Yeah.
So that's that sticky wicket, because I've seen a lot of websites that really try to grab onto it's meaningful if. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I don't want to necessarily define that. I don't want to define that for others. I want it to be personalized so that it's meaningful to you.
Yeah.
So that's where that spirit came from.
I love that.
You're creating your intentionality.
Yeah, absolutely. And how long have you been at this?
The blog itself, I mean, obviously we've established, I've been traveling for a while, but the blog itself, we were actually in Barcelona in 2019 when Italy had shut down that very first city in COVID. And it was on the news. And it had never occurred to me before that I wouldn't be able to, okay, I take that back, in 9/11. It occurred to me that I would not be able to travel. I take that back. It had been a very long time since I had felt that. And I remember sitting in Barcelona and thinking, that's an Italy issue. I feel so sorry for them, but that is localized in Italy.
Right.
And we left, and I left with that thought that, God, that I feel so sorry for those people in Italy. Mm-hmm. And it was months, just a matter of months until we're shutting down the schools. Yeah. And so the blog came from that desire to remind people that we would travel again.
Yeah.
And I started it with, it was all, here's where we've been. Here's what we learned while we were there. Here's what you can consider doing. So it was kind of that I was keeping myself sane.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that sanity of, okay, wow, I'm feeling a little bit claustrophobic with this. And so let's remind everybody of what we were doing. And okay, here we can get out. And then it grew from there. Once we started leaving, like staying with your bubble, remember the bubble, right? We're going to stay with our bubble, and we're going to go out to outdoor areas. We started writing about hiking, and we started writing just to remind people, get out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when we started seeing the impact it was having on our kids, I started taking the stance of, you need to get your teenagers out, get them outside, get them active, you know, because you started seeing that drain that was happening on the children. And so it really just kind of evolved all through COVID into what it is now, which is this idea of, you know, really allow yourself to create a trip that is unique to you.
Yeah.
Don't just follow the 35 by 35 because it's something to check off. And that was kind of where I connected with Roger, that I, that rethinking of the term bucket list.
Yeah.
That idea of, why do you want to go somewhere? What do you want it to do for you? How do you want to come back?
Yeah.
And so it's evolved over all of that.
I love that. I feel like so many people really found their passion projects during COVID. And like, if nothing else good came from that period of time, I think that there's so much good and so many incredible things that now exist because we are all cooped up with nothing else to do.
Right. Yeah. And it made you reflect on what is your hope? What is your desire?
Yeah.
What is your goal?
Exactly.
And really, it did. It caused a lot of reflection.
And, and
for better or worse, we have that coming out.
Right. And you've also written a book.
Yes.
Tell me about this.
We have a travel with intention playbook. It's a fun guide to personalized travel. That's what we want people to do. We have a book that really guides them through that process. Like, what kind of questions can you ask yourself to unpack what it is that you want to get out of a trip? What kind of activities, what kind of downtime, what kind of space do you need to give yourself? You know, really diving in deep to what you and your travel companions really want from the experience. And the book itself and the workbook that complements it just gives you some exercises to really work through that so that you can help yourself design a trip that you really want to experience.
Yeah. I love that. Is there anything else you've got cooking, anything coming down the pike that you can give us a little peek into?
Yeah, we have a course. One of the most popular things that we have talked about is, how do you find these authentic places, these food gems where you can dive in and experience something that you just want to keep talking about for hours at a time. So that was one of the most popular newsletter pieces we ever did. And so I teased that out and ended up creating a course around it. And so we have a Find Authentic Food Anywhere course. It's just about ready to go. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
And then I started, I also have a free email course that's up right now. I can actually send you the link to that if people are interested.
Yes,
and
it's definitely really
teases out how you can create a personalized travel itinerary for yourself using ChatGPT and diving into using the AI technology that's available to us to create personalized travel experiences.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited about that. I can give you the link to that as well. So it's just, a lot of really good stuff in the works that's all focused on helping people personalize their travel experiences, because I think that's where you get the biggest bang for your buck.
Absolutely. Michelle, this has been such a treat. I'm so glad that we had the chance to connect. It's been such a pleasure meeting you. Where can we find you?
For sure. No, I've loved this. Please, please feel free to come back and talk to me anytime. It's travelwithintention.com. And that's the website that we have. We definitely are on I would say Twitter, but he just changed it to X. We're on all the socials. You can connect to those through the website as well. But we would love to have you come visit the site.
Excellent. I will include links to all of the things in the episode show notes so people can find you and follow along. Yeah. And I hope that you will come back with more experiences as you guys continue to have these adventures.
Oh, we would love to continue to talk with you. That would not be a problem at all.
That sounds good to me.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.